Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Growth Well podcast, where we explore the art of balancing professional growth and personal well-being. I'm your host, Josh Bird. Thanks, as always, to my friends at MarketScale for helping us make this happen. Y'all, I have a fantastic guest for you today. He's a dad. He's an author. He's a speaker. He's a life coach. I'm going to let him tell his story, though, because I couldn't even come close to doing it justice. So without further ado, let's get into it. Welcome, Tyran Jackson. Thank you much for coming on the show, man. How are you?
Man, I'm doing great. Doing great. How about yourself?
I'm so good. I'm better now that I see your smiling face, man. I've been excited about this. For our audience listening, Bruce Pulver, who was on the show in the past, introduced us, and he sent me Tyran's bio, and I was like, oh my gosh, we've got to have him on the show, and we finally do. So I'm really excited about that. But for our audience, just tell us a little bit about you. You have a really unique story. So how did you get where you are? You know, just give us the quick backdrop.
So, no problem, Josh. So I'm a professional speaker. I'm a life coach, focused on really helping those build resiliency and getting past grief recovery. I like to tell people I help those going through trauma, tragedy, and transition make the transformation so they can be triumphant again. And so ultimately, I really try to help people based on some of the experiences that I've had to endure and go through. And as I get deeper into it, you'll see why. Now, I start off saying I was an engineer at first, and I thought that was what I was supposed to do. But, you know, sometimes life, you know, turns us in a different direction, and we end up going through things that we might not have originally planned for. But as we're talking about growth and change, you know, I'm an example of somebody whose whole direction has changed, and that trajectory has actually gone in the path that is given me a level of fulfillment well beyond I ever would have imagined.
That's amazing. I can't wait for everybody to hear your story. So let's just jump into it. The first question I like to ask people is why? What is your purpose for doing what you do? What gets you up and out of bed in the morning?
So what gets me out of bed every day is the fact that I realize I can make a difference in people's lives. And a lot of times people don't really realize the importance of that assignment. Mm-hmm. And now it's one thing to do certain things and say, I want to help people. But when you actually know that you can help people with the pain that they're feeling, whether they want to admit it or not, and help show them how to overcome what they faced, what they're facing now, what their concerns, what their anxieties are, then that is something that it's a gift that you shouldn't hold to yourself.
Yeah.
So, because, you know, in essence, we want to create positive growth and change in the world. And so, like I said, based on, you know, what I've experienced, what I've gone through, and the transformation that I've made, I realize that there are other people who are going through some challenges that they need a little bit of help and coaching to get past.
Yeah.
So that's one part of it, of what I do. And then just the fact that I know that I feel like I have a unique ability to inspire others to get more out of themselves.
Yeah.
And as we're talking about growth, that is one of the biggest things. You see people with potential, with capabilities, with skills, but they don't actually apply it. But sometimes with the right bit of inspiration and the right bit of developing a plan or roadmap on how to be able to get the most out of it and implement it, you can see amazing things out of those others.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you've mentioned your story. I've mentioned your story. I think we should just get into it. Why don't we just tell them your story?
Yep. Okay. So first off, this is a story that you'll never forget if you're listening to this. And I know that's a bold statement, but I want you to hear me out. 6 years ago, my wife, Malika, and I, we were celebrating our 15th wedding anniversary. And as people get ready to celebrate their anniversary, they, you know, have a lot of different plans on what they're going to do. We decided we would go on vacation. We would take a trip. We would get away from the hustle and bustle. She was a human resources director for a Fortune 500 company. I was an engineering manager for a small company. We were both very busy leading up to this time. But we thought we would get away and go to the Bahamas for 5 days to be able to reconnect, to be able to get away from everything that was going on. So the day before we went to the Bahamas, I dropped our son off with his uncle in Nashville, Tennessee, and told him, son, don't worry. Mom and dad will be back in 1 week to pick you up. And he was actually excited because he was going to get to, you know, get spoiled by his uncle and terrorize his cousins and play with their dog and all of these things that, you know, the kids do when they're not around mom and dad. But he thought it was a good thing for us to do it. And so, you know, I left him there thinking that, you know, we were going to have the time of our lives and we were going to come back and pick him up. And I told him, don't worry, we'll go and take a trip with him once we get back. So I leave him there that day. The next day, Malika and I, we fly to the Bahamas. And the first 2 days we were there, everything was great. We had time at the beach, fruity drinks, time at the pool. We took some amazing pictures. Everything was great. And we were really sitting there talking and discussing how we were, you know, proud to be able to make it through 15 years of marriage together and still be in love with one another and think about how we were going to spend the next 15 years and the 15 years after that and so on and so forth. So things were great. The third day, we decided we were going to do something a little more adventurous. We decided we would leave the resort and we would go on an excursion and tour the island. You know, people do this all the time when they're on vacation. So we wake up that morning, we book, get to the edge of the resort where a bus picks us up and takes us to a marina. And as we get to the marina, we have a decision to make. Do we want to do the half-day tour, a four-hour tour, which was going to tour part of the island, but we were going to get back and have the afternoon to be able to go back to the resort, or we were going to have the full-day tour, where it was going to be 8 hours gone. And as Malika and I were talking about it, I was thinking I wanted to go golfing that afternoon, and she wanted to go to the spa, so we said we would go on the half-day tour and didn't think anything of it at the time. We get our tickets, we get on the boat, and we take off at 9 o'clock in the morning, and it seems like everything is fine. And I can remember sitting there with my right arm over Malika thinking to myself, we're in paradise. We are having our lives. We are enjoying this vacation thoroughly. However, at 9:05, my life changed forever. At 9:05, I found myself waking up face down on the surface of a burning boat. Unbeknownst to us, there was a fuel leak that was emanating from a fuel tank, and Malika and I were sitting right above that fuel tank, and something caused a spark, which led to an explosion. As I found myself waking up face down on the surface of this burning boat, I was in shock. I didn't know what happened. Now, there was a second boat that took off the same time, the one that was doing the full-day tour, and passengers on that boat were yelling to me, "Get off the boat, get off the boat." I find myself trying to get off the boat, but as I look down, my right leg is literally on fire. My left foot is severed. I can see my ankle bone. I can see blood rushing out. I try to push myself up, but I crumble. Try to push myself up again, and I crumbled again. I didn't realize it. At the time, I had a broken collarbone. I had a broken right foot, third-degree burns on my right leg, fractured pelvis, fractured vertebrae, bruised ribs. And like I said, I couldn't push myself up. The only thing that I could do to get away from the flames was to put my right hand, fingertips and the ridges on the surface of that boat just to drag myself a couple feet away from those flames. Now, by the grace of God, some of the passengers from that other boat, we were still in shallow water. They came over, they pulled me off the edge of the boat. And I'm grateful that they did because 3 minutes after they got me off, the second fuel tank on the boat exploded. Now, Malika and one other passenger were thrown in a different direction into the ocean. And a third boat came and picked them up and brought them to shore. They were taken to an ambulance, picked them up and took them to a clinic. As they got me to shore, they had to put me on the back of a pickup truck to take me to the same clinic. And as I arrived there, I'm on a stretcher being wheeled into the clinic. And this is the first time I hear Malika. I hear her moans. I hear her suffering. She's in agony and I can't do anything about it. There's one doctor at this clinic, and this doctor tells me that they're sending me and this other passenger to the good hospital and that Malika will come later that afternoon. So I'm thinking to myself that my wife must not be injured as badly as I am if they're not sending her at that point in time. So they put me on a plane and fly me to Nassau where this good hospital is, put me through emergency surgery to try to repair what was left of my left foot and reattach it to my leg. And when I wake up in ICU, and the doctors come in and I ask them, where is my wife? Is she here yet? The doctors tell me, Mr. Jackson, we hate to inform you, but your wife didn't make it. Your wife died at that clinic. So I crawled to sleep that night. I'm suffering. I'm in disbelief. I go to sleep thinking that this is just a bad dream, that this was not real, and that I wake up the next day and would be okay. But I wake up the next day to the realization that this is true and that my wife is gone. Now, that next morning, I have to wake up and I have to do something that I didn't want to do, but I knew I had to do. Remember that 12-year-old boy that I dropped off with his aunt and uncle? I had to call him on the phone and tell him, son, mom and dad were in a horrible accident and mom's never coming home again. And to hear his pain on the other side of that, and to know that he is in shock and is going to have to suffer from a decision that he had no parts of, but as a result that he's going to have to grow up without his mother. And he's asking me, Dad, are you okay? And I'm finding myself having to lie to him, tell him over the phone that I'm going to be all right, even though I didn't know if I was going to be okay. But reassure him that God is with us and that this is something that we will get past. Later that same afternoon, after he and I talked and I calmed him down as much as possible, I'm laying there and I'm feeling worse and worse. And what I realized was there was an EKG monitor over my head. And as I could see my vital signs there over the course of 2 hours, I saw my vital signs go from green to yellow to red. What they did was they tried to reattach what was left of my foot to my leg, and my foot had gotten infected. Now this infection was starting to go through my body. And at that point, I was coming to the realization that my wife has been taken away from me. And now I'm about to die now. And my son is going to be without both of his parents.
Yeah.
All because we were at the wrong place at the wrong time on the wrong boat. And this tragic accident occurred. I went to sleep that night thinking that the next time I closed my eyes was going to be the last time I closed my eyes. Now, through the grace of God and a lot of things that were happening, I did wake up that next day, and I was still, I still had a lot that I had to go through. But at this point in time, things were happening that I wasn't fully aware of. And I was basically confiscated from this hospital in the Bahamas and flown to the U.S. to a level one trauma center in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where they basically did everything they could to try to save my life after hearing what happened. By this time, my sister and my mom, they had gotten to the same location that I was in Florida. And the doctors were saying that they've got to do whatever they can to try to save my life.
Yeah.
And I go into emergency surgery and I wake up and my left leg below the knee is gone. Over the course of the next several days, I go through multiple surgeries to start putting me back together again, as I'm still trying to get over the heartbreak of my wife no longer being here. But after I went through five surgeries in one day, that's when things started to make sense. And I was starting to process sort of what was going on. Now, in the midst of this whole time, I had been praying about this, what had happened, and trying to get an understanding. And at that point, God spoke to me and he told me a couple of things. He told me, Tyran, if I wanted to, I could have taken your life three different times. When that boat exploded, when your vital signs went from green to yellow to red, and even when you went through multiple surgeries and your vitals were still all over the place. He told me he was keeping me here for a reason, and that that reason would become more apparent as I move forward. He told me that it was Malika's time to come home, and the sooner I got to a place of accepting that, the better off I would be. He told me I wouldn't go back to being an engineer, but that there was a different journey for me to go forward with. And he told me this. He told me to be resilient, be resilient. The obstacles that I've overcome just to still be at that point were nothing compared to the obstacles that I was going to have to face moving forward, and that I had a choice to make if I not only wanted to just survive, but to thrive. And one other message about resilience became clear, and even though I didn't understand it fully in that moment, it was that resilience was not about regaining what was lost, but reshaping what still remains. And it's what we do with what still remains in our life that's going to determine our narrative moving forward.
Say that one more time. I want our audience to catch that. Say that again, please. That's important.
Resilience is not about regaining what was lost, but it's about reshaping what still remains. And it's what we do with what still remains that determines the narrative of our life from this point forward.
Wow.
When we go through adversity, when we go through obstacles, when we go through struggles in life, and I know a lot of people are going to go through things, maybe not as traumatic as that, but we're going to have something that's going to knock us down.
Yeah.
And it can keep us down. And we can find ourselves trying to hold on to what once was, and it can keep us in a negative space, in a negative state. And don't get me wrong, I had to go through my depression, my anxiety, my survivor's remorse, the guilt and the grief. These are all elements of what was a part of what I had to deal with. But ultimately, the goal was to be able to process and accept that, but understand that I still had life to live and that there were things that I was still going to have to do. So the sooner I could get to that point of reshaping with the cards, with what still remained, that it was going to be easier for me to actually fulfill my life's purpose and be able to move forward in a way that was powerful beyond what I could have imagined.
Yeah.
I had every reason to give up on life. And
sure,
as I was going through this recovery, remember, I lost my wife, my best friend, the mother of my child, my rock, somebody who I had 17 total years with, 15 as husband and wife. And life as I knew it was no more.
Yeah.
I had to go through injuries. I'm a permanent amputee.
Yeah.
And to have to go to, you know, the understanding the identity aspect of not even being able to go to the bathroom when I wanted to was something that I had to process. I was an engineer before any of this. And I went through short-term memory loss. I was in and out of consciousness 5 different times. And so neurologically, I couldn't remember details. Couldn't remember conversations I'd had 5 minutes before for a period of time. So as an engineer, you can't be the person not remembering what you needed. So it was like, okay, what am I going to do and how am I going to function? But the beauty of all this is that in the midst of going through this, I discovered who I truly was and how I could truly make an impact beyond what I ever thought imaginable when I was living the life before that time. So going to your original question, Josh, what was the moment or where was the point in time in which a transition occurred or where I, you know, became the person I am? That was it. That was essentially it. I can look back to June 30th, 2018 and say that that was the time in which my whole life changed.
Yeah.
And my business, my platform is called Reborn Resilient because a new version of me was reborn on that day. And even though I lost so much, it's created a person who has so much to gain and so much to offer to the rest of the world.
It's what an amazing story. And I think that leads into, you know, the types of things we talk about on this show is how did that change your daily routines? You know, how did that change the way you wake up in the morning, the way you look at your calendar, the way you take care of yourself and your others and others, you know, how has that, all of the trauma that you've experienced and the growth that you've experienced on the backside of that, changed your personal world? Obviously it's changed your professional world, but how do you think about your day differently? How do you go about your day, now?
Well, I'll say this, I had to go through a tremendous amount of healing, not just physically, but spiritually, emotionally, mentally, into being put back together. Imagine me, I was essentially a vase that was broken. And now the pieces had to be glued back together in a way. And it wasn't going to look exactly like it once was. And when I say that, one of the things that I emphasize is that, you know, I had to learn a new level of vulnerability in the midst of who I was. I had to learn how to ask for help in certain ways. And I had to learn how to pick up new habits in order to be able to get to a place of recovery, not just physically, but emotionally as well and mentally. And so I say that to say that it created new habits that I had to pick up. I had to do an intense amount of physical therapy. But once I started getting to a place where I was able to function again, because one of my goals, one of my motivations was that I needed to be able to be there for our son. Mm-hmm. And so that meant to be able to physically be able to walk, run, move, do those type of things, if at all possible. It turned into me actually doing boot camps every morning to get myself physically into condition after I got past the emotional pain and trauma, because the emotional pain and trauma would keep me in a depressed state. But I found myself doing certain things to get out of it. The physical exercise was a great relief. I got into very detailed prompted journaling because it allowed me to take the thoughts that were going through my head and put them on paper, and they became more real. I was able to focus on, you know, what was going to be the things that I need to get in order in my life if I was going to make the most out of it again, because everything that I know had been shattered and broken. So
right.
There were a number of different elements, but and I don't know if you can see my core values back here, but it led to a lot of different things that I became part of who I was. I became far more disciplined in the things that were needed for me to be able to just make a little bit of progress each day.
Right.
I was back to a place where I was where I wanted to be. Being consistent with some of these habits got me to a place where I went from not knowing if I'd ever walk again. The doctor said you might, with the prosthetic, you might walk in 8 to 10 months. But in developing these things, I was walking in 3.5 months. And by 6 months, I started running 5Ks. I never
ran before. That's strong. That's strong. Come on.
I learned how to swim with one leg. I started to, but part of the beauty of it is that in doing these things, I was growing, and I was developing confidence in myself, and I was expanding boundaries beyond what I ever would have before. And so That's one of the things that when you realize that you are getting a payoff for doing the things that you need to do in order to improve, you become more energized, you become more focused in doing those things because you are growing and you're seeing and feeling the growth real time. So that was part of what changed in me, is that determination, that focus to understand that if I do the right things, it's going to get me to the outcome and the goal that I'm looking for. There's a process to everything. That's where a little bit of the engineer comes back.
Yeah.
I start thinking about those things. So anyway, that I think is so important to be able to understand that you got to develop some of the right habits, but then have the right motivation in order to keep you going.
Yeah. And something we talk a lot about on the show is, you know, we live in a society of overwhelm. You know, we've got our work, we got our family, we got our personal goals, whether it's health or fitness or whatever it may be. And oftentimes they're at odds with each other, right? And they, you know, there's not enough time in the day. There really isn't. I know I was just having this conversation with my wife like an hour ago about how there's just not enough time in the day. And so I'm curious if, you know, going through something like you went through and now speaking with all of the groups that you speak with, you know, how does that change the way you think about how you use your time and how you prioritize and what you prioritize in your life?
Well, I will say this, you hit the nail on the head. I tell you, overwhelm is one of the biggest obstacles or challenges I think a lot of us face. And sometimes we don't realize how it can increase the level of stress that we have. It can definitely jeopardize, you know, the relationships or the state of the relationships that we have with others, how we just operate. And so I've had to be very mindful about one of the things you stated, how I prioritize what's important and what isn't, and try to learn to limit how much I take on. And know when to put the brakes. I understand that rest is necessary. Rest is required for the healing to take place and for us to be able to recover and get past certain things. And that's an element of resiliency. But there is one thing that I've started practicing, and I think that it's a good something for us to, whenever we have like so many things that are happening or stressing us, it's a little acronym. It's called SOBER. But what it stands for is the stop, observe what's going on, take a deep breath, and then you start to think about what has occurred and why am I in this situation while you're taking that moment to pause. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of that acronym is the E. You expand your perspective. You think about how can I respond? What are my options here? And then you actually respond. I think that sometimes we get so we get so reactionary that we don't think when situations are happening. So our brain shuts off and we just, you know, especially if we're stressed, if we're in a mood, then that's one of the things that can cause us to to create, have this increased level of stress.
Yeah.
But I think that when we do certain things to be able to sort of just take that moment to process what's going on, then we do a little bit better emotionally with responding to those, that adversity. So,
yeah. I think that's something that I don't do well. And I think most of society doesn't do well is, you know, you're faced with a challenge or, you know, some sort of adversity, and you often, you know, suck it up and you run headlong into it. Right. And you're like, I'm going to beat this thing. And you don't stop and go and consider the possibilities, the options, the reality versus the emotion talking. There's so many things that I think stopping and taking that breath and taking inventory. And, you know, one of my daughter's coaches in horses, when my daughter rides competitive equestrian jumping, and she, her coach will just say, stop, get organized. And she kind of goes through this multi-point body checklist about what she's doing, and it can really calm her down, you know? And I think that's, I love that acronym. Now, besides that positive self-talk, do you have systems or people in your life to help you recognize when you're sort of getting off balance? And you need to kind of bring it back to center. You know, I think a lot of people are, you may have better self-awareness than most, but most of my guests, somebody else knows it long before they know they need to make a change.
Right, right. I agree with that. One thing that I think going through what I went through, I've become far more empathetic, far more observant of how others are, but I realized how naive I was before. So,
yeah,
you know, that's an element of where you can recognize certain things. But where I'm going with this is there are definitely times where I don't see it and I rely on other people to sort of tell me or in some ways check me to make sure that I understand that, you know, you're going through some challenges. And look, I'm not immune to them as well, but I do have a small circle of people who are emotionally aware and who I understand that I can talk to about pretty much any and everything without judgment. And I encourage, you know, they say that, you know, you need to have, you know, only a handful of real friends or just, I look at it this way, is that you've got to know who your people are, but you have to have your people.
Yeah.
And they need to be there and understand, you know, where you are in life, that there's going to be times where you've got to be, you know, strong and observant for them because they don't see what they're going through, and vice versa.
Right.
We all can be victims of our own thoughts, meaning that we can always think that, look, we're better off than we really are. But sometimes having those checks, and I'm a person who believes in therapy and counseling. I never really did it before what happened to me, but in doing it, it taught me so many different things about myself that I wasn't aware of, but also it created a level of comfort with opening up. And I think sometimes we don't do that because, like you said, especially as men, we have inherent masculine demeanor that, hey, I can handle it, whatever.
I can handle it till I break, and then exactly, I'll stand up and exactly do it again. And that's a recipe for disaster that I'm so guilty of.
Yep. And I look at it like this. We all have enough stress on us to begin with, but then when we start adding all of these micro traumas on ourselves, what we're doing essentially, if you take a Coke bottle, we're shaking that Coke bottle up every time something happens. And then the key is, okay, what are you going to do when it's time to release it? Are you going to just twist that cap off fast and see the explosion come? Or are you just going to twist it off slowly so some of that pressure can relieve itself? And we have to be able to have those people, those moments, those that we're comfortable with expressing our emotions to, talking to, in order to slowly twist that cap off so we don't have so much bottled in.
So. Yeah. That is so, so important. Thank you for sharing that. So I've got one last question for you, and that's just advice to others. I mean, there's been advice throughout this whole thing, but, you know, I am so sorry that you had to go through the trauma that you had to go through. And the truth is, most people won't have to go through a trauma like that. But we all have our own demons, right? And so if there's one piece of advice that you've learned from all this growing that you've been doing, that you could give to our others, our listeners, and then they can share with others, you know, what would that be?
So the piece of advice I would tell everybody, because we're going to all face some type of struggle, setback, breakdown in our lives. There's a lesson in every loss, mm-hmm. but you have to be intentional about learning that lesson. Far too often we keep going. And like you said, something happens to us, we figure out a way to get through and we keep going. But we don't take that moment to stop and figure out, okay, what sort of caused that? What did I do to contribute to it? What can I do differently next time from preventing that from happening? How can I be wiser? How can I be more aware? How I can be smarter? So I don't make the same mistake, or at least be on the lookout for when conditions and circumstances are setting up for something similar to happen.
Yeah.
A lot of times we don't learn from the mistakes. We just keep going. And I think it is an intentional act. And so when things are a struggle with us, you know, sometimes we do need to take that moment shortly thereafter to just, you know, sit with ourselves and think through and process what happened and figure out what did I gain from this situation to prevent something similar from happening in the future.
Yeah. And, you know, you said something that you kind of passed right over, but I think it's really important, or it's important at least to me, is being real with yourself and taking ownership of your contribution to said situation, right? Things do happen to us in life, but oftentimes part of it, at least, may be the way we responded to that thing, or it could be the way that we positioned ourselves to allow that thing to happen, or, you know, a number of things. And I think it's really hard, but taking ownership of the, whatever your role in that lesson was, and just is super important, super hard to do. But I think the more we can do that, you know, we'll be healthier and happier and move forward in a way that's healthy, right?
I agree. And it's so easy to point the finger elsewhere and look at
really
what other
is.
People did. But when you get that mirror and you're being real with yourself, you understand that, okay, in most cases, you had a bigger role in it than what you might want to accept.
Yeah.
And so,
absolutely.
But that leads to growth and change. So you become a better person moving forward. So it's all part of it, part of the journey we have as we live. So
yeah. So what's next for you? What's next for you on your growth journey? What are you excited about? What are you doing?
So what I'm doing, so I am on bigger and better stages. I've been able to share not just my story, but share about what it truly means to have a resilient mindset and live a resilient life. With companies, organizations. I just did a big talk recently for the Las Vegas Raiders and their football team and some other, you know, big clients. But, you know, I realized that part of my journey is to be a vessel to help people who are in some ways stuck and paralyzed, or either going through the motions, but not really realizing how they can get the most out of life.
Yeah.
And I like to, you know, frame it that if I can, you know, make lemonade out of the lemons that I had in my life, then there is no reason why you can't either.
Yeah.
And sometimes the things that we're going through, we make it seem more significant, or I won't say we make it seem more significant, but we let it impact us negatively more than what we should.
Yeah.
When we should be grateful for not just the blessings, but really understand that we can use that to create positive growth in ourselves. And then the key is just figuring out how you're going to manifest that growth. But yeah, that's what I'm doing. So I'm coaching people, I'm coaching groups to really strengthen their focus on bouncing back from life's unexpected curveballs.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. We'll put your information in the show notes if you're watching on YouTube. So you can get linked up to Tyran. Tyran, thank you so much for your time today.
No problem, Josh, man. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Absolutely. And that's a wrap, everyone. Thank you for listening. We are so appreciative that you come back time and time again and listen to this show. We believe that it's putting light into the world. And so my challenge to you as you go out is go out and pursue growth well and spread the love. Have a great day.